The Defense Department's overseas contingency budget might survive the end of military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yesterday, two of the Pentagon's top civilian and uniformed leaders asked the House Armed Services Committee to keep authorizing an OCO budget, even after the U.S. finishes the drawdowns in the region. DOD's latest OCO request came late in the year, and it's less than Congress anticipated. The House set aside $79 billion for OCO funding when it passed DOD's budget for fiscal 2015, but now the Pentagon's only asking for about $59 billion. Todd Harrison is senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. He's watching the budget deliberations on Capitol Hill unfold, and he joins us now to talk about it. Hi there, Todd.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good, thanks. So I don't think we quite know what the Senate's going to do yet. The Senate Appropriations Committee, I believe, is actually marking up the DOD budget today. But on the House side anyway, that $20 billion delta is there between the request and what was passed. What are some of the reasons behind that difference?
Well, you know, you can't read too much into what the House initially passed because they were just operating on a placeholder figure that the administration had put out with the regular budget request. So what happened this year was when the regular budget request came out, the administration was not yet done deciding what they needed in more funding. So they put in a placeholder. That placeholder value was set to what the administration requested last year, $79.4 billion. So when the House started moving this legislation without any other guidance from the department, they just went ahead with a placeholder figure, knowing that it would be replaced once DOD actually came out with an OCO war funding request. Now, DOD did come out with that OCO funding request. It's about $59 billion. And within that, you start breaking it down, and DOD says that about $53 billion of it is actually for Afghanistan. The remainder is for things like this counterterrorism fund and the European reassurance fund that are separate from Afghanistan. So I expect that what the House and the Senate are really going to be operating off of from this point on is what DOD actually requested.
But the House, at least in the authorization bill, I think maybe I'm not certain about the appropriations bill, used OCO to fund what some people would have considered enduring priorities. I think the A-10 made it in there. Is the House using it at least in part as a relief valve from sequestration?
Well, this is not new.
Sure.
It still remains to be seen what the appropriators are going to do, and ultimately that's what matters in terms of money. You can't spend an authorization. You
right.
need an appropriation. But to put it in context, last year Congress moved $10.2 billion from DOD's base budget, and they just reclassified it as being war-related. And so Congress did quite a bit of that last year, and that's allowed. And the reason they did that is to avoid breaching the budget caps for 2014, because the OCO funding does not count against the budget caps. So I suspect that Congress will be doing some of that again this year as well.
What we heard from some of the testimony yesterday from Admiral Winnefeld and Bob Work, the deputy secretary, was that not only is there going to be an enduring requirement for OCO because they need to repair equipment, and et cetera, coming back from Afghanistan, but they want to use it for other things beyond Afghanistan. I think the argument basically is we're not going to have enough money in the base budget to handle, even small contingencies that pop up around the world. So, even after Afghanistan's done, we want to use this money to go do operations as they come up. How realistic do you think it is for that pot of money to stay around after Afghanistan, after everybody's out of Afghanistan and even the reset functions start drawing to a close?
I think there is some growing impatience on Capitol Hill about the use of supplemental war funding. I hear from folks on both sides of the aisle who are expressing some skepticism about the use of supplemental funding in this way. On the right, you've got fiscal conservatives who view this as basically cheating, getting around the budget caps by using supplemental appropriations for things that DOD in the past had funded right out of its base budget. Things like, routine presence missions in various theaters around the world, and some depot maintenance that DOD was going to perform anyway. On the left, I hear from folks saying, hey, this is just a way of getting more money for defense. If we're going to do that, we should get more money for domestic programs as well. Because as you recall, the budget caps are structured so that they're split evenly between defense and non-defense. So they're basically arguing if you give more to defense, you need to give more to non-defense, to be fair. Regardless of the merits of what's actually in the funding request, a lot of it are things that are, really true legitimate needs for the department. But regardless of the merits, I think folks on Capitol Hill are growing more skeptical and more frustrated that we continue to see these supplemental bills coming up year after year.
Right. Back in, I guess it was March, when the administration rolled out the full 15 budget minus OCO, obviously, there was this thing called the Opportunity, Security, and Growth Initiative. I don't think those words have been uttered since then. It was basically dead on arrival on the Hill. But there was $26 billion in there for DOD. A lot of that money they were going to put into buying back readiness. If that money's not going to be there, does readiness take the big hit unless it goes into OCO in some way?
Yeah, so if they don't get that extra money, then what the department has basically said is they will not be able to recover readiness as quickly as they had planned to. If they got that money this year, they would be able to recover some of that readiness that they've lost more quickly. It's hard. Readiness is a difficult thing because it's hard to have good measures of what readiness actually is. Instead, we focus on measuring the inputs to readiness. So, that money would have gone to fund more flying hours for our pilots, more steaming days for our ships so they could be out at sea more, tank miles for the Army, which is how they measure, actually using their equipment and going out in the field and conducting exercises and training. Not doing that stuff that was planned will have some impact on readiness. But, I don't think anyone was really, pinning all their hopes on this opportunity growth and security initiative going through. It didn't seem to have much of a chance to begin with.
Right. You hosted Randy Forbes, senior leader on the House Armed Services Committee at a Capitol Hill event, I believe it was yesterday. Did he shed any particular light on what the leadership of at least that committee is thinking as we move through this budget process?
Yeah, it was a great session. We were really happy to have Congressman Forbes there. It was their second in our series of this that we are doing. We had one with Congressman Adam Smith earlier, also on the House Armed Services Committee. I thought it was interesting. Representative Forbes made several good points. I pressed him on military compensation and base closures, and he basically said, that is something we need to do, but it needs to be part of a package that also includes another urgent reform for DOD. And that's acquisition reform. So he thinks that we ought to do all of those things together. We shouldn't try to tackle them piecemeal. So I suppose there's some equity in that, that all parts of the budget need some reforming at the same time. The other thing was interesting is we got into Sea Power. And of course, he's chairman of the Sea Power subcommittee on HASC.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a bit about, priorities for the Navy and their acquisition programs, and he brought up the U-Class, which is the unmanned carrier-launched system that the Navy is looking at buying right now. And he voiced some support for, thinking longer term about what kind of capabilities the Navy should be buying. He was skeptical of, plans and ideas to buy a U-class that would be less stealthy or not have the same capabilities as we could start to buy right now. I think the way he put it is, we shouldn't be buying something that isn't even capable of going up against current threats. We need to be buying something that really, we can use 10, 20 years from now. So I thought he made some good points there, especially how, that program, could really revolutionize the carrier air wing and, quite frankly, keep the carriers more relevant in the fleet for longer into the future.
Let me finish up with just one follow-up on one of the issues you just mentioned, which is personnel spending. I think Congress has basically punted everything to next year when the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission, I think is the full name, is supposed to report back. Even when it does come up with recommendations, is there much of a hope that Congress will act on them? Because I don't think it's required to.
No, it's not. When they passed the legislation creating the Compensation Commission, at the last minute in the conference committee, they took out the verbiage that would have required Congress to give a vote to the commission's recommendation. So they're not required to do it. I'm actually hearing some talk that there's hope that Congress may actually implement some of the reforms that DOD proposed this year. So they may go ahead and act on a few things. I suppose you could view it as a down payment until the Compensation Commission comes back next year. I don't expect them to tackle some of the more difficult issues like restructuring military health care. I don't expect them to tackle that until the Compensation Commission reports back, and probably commissaries as well. That's another really tough issue on what to do with the commissary system and how that plays in the overall compensation package for military personnel. So I think those are things they're going to wait to hear from the commission on.